August 26, 1996, our second session with Dr. Cyril Wecht, the county coroner of Allegheny County. This is Judy Rubenstein and Shirley Stolzer for the National Council of Jewish Women. Dr. Wecht, the last time we met with you, we talked very much about your early childhood and growing up with your family in your early school years. Today, I think we'd like to continue with your life at the University of Pittsburgh, if you would just review the years you were there and then begin your professional education and career.
It's interesting for me to reflect upon the fact that I never thought about applying to any other college. I had been valedictorian of my class at Fifth Avenue High School, which was not maybe a remarkable achievement, but I had a good record and had done quite well on some aptitude tests and so on, but I never thought for one moment about going anywhere else. I was just thinking of that the other day when somebody was talking about a child going away to college and so on and so forth, and my kids were very happy with their home and happy to be three of the four of them happy to be back in Pittsburgh now, and a fourth one would like to be back if the professional circumstances are attractive enough. So they weren't waiting to burst away from us. We have a very close family, but they certainly wanted to go to other schools. But in any event, it never occurred to me that I would be going anywhere else but Pitt. I don't know whether I mentioned I got a scholarship for 4 years. It was a half scholarship, as I recall. It was given in the name of, under the auspices of the then registrar of Pitt. His name was Quick, Dr. Quick. I forget his first name. And that was based, I think, on performance in high school and interviews. So I had that. And then the first year, I also had another scholarship. I forget. Maybe it's on the CV from the somebody or other, civic club or women's club or so on. I think that should be on the CV. So that was all taken care of. And I think it was $10 a credit. I'm sure. I know. $10 a credit. So I had 15 credits, $150. Textbooks maybe a total $25, $35, because in those days, a good science textbook might be $7.50 or $10, and the other liberal arts courses, they might be $3, $4, $5. Then there was a lab breakage fee for chemistry, you put that up $25 or $15, and you got that back if you didn't blow up the lab. So, even if you think of it, allowing for inflation and so on, the amount of money was really cheap. I mean, even if you factor in inflation today, look what's happened to education. This is interesting to reflect upon. And I lived at home. We had moved to Squirrel Hill, although we still had our grocery store on the corner of Marion and Locust. We had moved. No, wait a minute. That's not correct. Wait a minute. Let me correct myself. We had not moved. We continued to live in the Lower Hill, and I remember it was called Quince Way, Q-U-I-N-C-E, Quince Way, and it was a one-block street between Marion and Pride. I think it's been obliterated now by Mercy Hospital's expansion as part of the helicopter pad up there now. Quince Way. It was a little more than an alley and a little bit less than a street, and it just went through. I guess somebody had determined that between Locust Street and the Boulevard of the Allies, there should be a throughway. Maybe Mercy Hospital people wanted it, I don't know. So somehow, where Quince Way came in, and we rented from there. So I went to school
You entered the University of Pittsburgh, in what year?
In 1948. I remember there was a freshman camp that was voluntary, if you wanted to. I think it was under the auspices of the I know it was under the auspices of the YMCA, and I think it was called Camp Quanakee, Kwon-A-K-W-E-E, because later I was to be in charge of that when I was elected president of the YMCA. I'll tell you about that later. But in any event, I went to that with a broken hand. That's another story. The last week of that summer, and I was spending all my summers in Connecticut. I think I told you before about Connecticut. And I was very much into horseback riding. I enjoyed it, and I had some good friends, and we rode long and hard. And I had this magnificent horse that they probably shouldn't have given me, but they were doing it as a special favor to me. They weren't too familiar with him, and he wasn't familiar with the trail, and he was really strong and powerful. And he took an abrupt, acute angular turn, and I was totally unsuspecting of that, and I was a good rider. I just flew off the saddle, and I broke a bone in my hand. And when I came home, much more distressing than the fracture was what I anticipated from my father, because I was a violinist, which I think I had mentioned to you last time, still playing 4 hours a day, practicing, at least I had been up until that time. My father handled it better than I thought he would, maybe because he realized I was going to college and all, I'd still be playing the violin, that I wouldn't be practicing the 4 hours a day and six on Saturday and Sunday, and taking the four lessons that I had been doing for about 9-10 years. So in any event, I went to that camp, and I was very limited in what I could do athletically because of that fracture. I started, as I recall, we used to start actual school always after Labor Day. I think now they moved it up into late August. And It was voluntary. It was just a kind of a way to get you better socially adjusted, maybe, to meet some kids. You must remember something, that Pitt at that time, I don't know how it is perceived, talked about today at the undergraduate level. At that time, Pitt was somewhat derogatorily, condescendingly referred to as Streetcar U. Everybody went there on the streetcar. I went there on the streetcar, and I think that 80-85% went on streetcars. Maybe 5-10% drove, and maybe 5-10% lived in the few dorms that they had available in those days. There weren't very many dorms. The dorms that are there now didn't exist. The Union was still the Shunley Hotel. I remember that well. So in any event, you asked me...
I asked you, why would they have that kind of camp?
Yeah, and one of the reasons was that, you know, they recognized that it was such a big school. And by the way, remember that this was post-World War II. And the veterans had returned, were still returning, were in school. They had a huge number of students. My recollection is that there were over 20,000 full-time undergraduates. I could be off on that, but it was burgeoning. We used classrooms. I myself had German at the YM and WHA on Belfield Avenue. And I had science lectures at a lecture hall as part of the Carnegie, as it's now called, all the way, it's just up where you begin to cross over the bridge toward the Phipps Conservatory.
Right.
So it wasn't convenient like across the street. It wasn't the big Carnegie Lecture Hall. It was a nice lecture hall. It was all the way up there just before you cross the bridge, tucked around the corner, beyond the library entrances. And then I had gym, which was obligatory unless you were in ROTC. And I was not in ROTC. So gym was obligatory, and that was at Trees Gym, which was above the stadium. It's no longer there. And there, I don't even know if they had bus. I don't think they had bus service in those days. I don't think they did. Students walked. I became friendly with a very nice young black man. He was older than I. He was a veteran. and he had a car, and I would get a lift with him many times. But I remember that, it's incredible, I should remember that schedule. How could I forget it? On Tuesdays and Thursdays, I went from 9 to 5, which was bad enough, but Tree's gym was 10 to 12, and I classes at down at the cathedral up till 10, and then at 12 I had a class at the YMHA. I had to get down to that was German, I think. Then I had to go over to Carnegie Lecture Hall for the lecture in zoology. It's the kind of thing, you know, you do when you're young, and it's the kind of thing that today students would not tolerate. But in those days, there wasn't much dissent. America was quiet. We were getting ready for the years of doldrum under Eisenhower. They were nice, quiet, peaceful years. Nobody was raising hell about anything. Drugs hadn't yet started. The kids were still listening to their parents. The big war was over. And, it really is amazing to think about it. And I'll comment on that later when I talk about student government.
Older than normal students, and maybe that had something.
Absolutely, and they were a good, I think, I didn't appreciate it perhaps then, think about it much, maybe a little, but I today would not hesitate in saying that the veterans were a maturing, stabilizing group, so to speak. Not that they were organized to do that, but their presence, I believe, was good for me. I was rushed by a fraternity then, Phi Epsilon Pi, because Mina Serbin then, later Cavalier, had known me from high school. Mina went to Shenley High School. She was a year ahead of me, but I had met Mina at the YMHA on some weekend social events. Once in a while I went out there. And a friend of mine had dated mine in high school, and I dated a friend of mine's, and so we kind of knew each other, and she was already going steady with Victor Cavalier. Victor had been the president of the fraternity. He had already graduated, but he was the revered and respected leader in the fraternity. And so because of Mina, they rushed me. They probably would have ignored me coming from Fifth Avenue High School otherwise, because they were the top fraternity, top Jewish fraternity. They had won the interfraternity trophy, which is based upon the cumulative points in everything from ping pong and bowling to touch football and softball and debate and singing and volleyball and basketball and you name it. Everything was thrown in. Oh, and scholarship too. So they had won the Interfraternity Cup over top Gentile fraternities that were very powerful in those days, and they could get anybody they wanted to pretty much. So I joined the fraternity, and when I think of it now, there's no question that it was a very big thing for me, not only to become more of a social animal, which I certainly not been at Fifth Avenue High School, but also to have a group to relate to. There were other non-fraternity groups, too, that people related to, associated with different organizations and so on. But having a fraternity was very meaningful. And we did a lot of things and all the social events and all the athletic events, which I enjoyed and participated in. And then I became very active. And I started in college activities and so on. So I was there and continued to commute each day by streetcar back and forth, which is no great big deal. We lived, as they say, by the Mercy Hospital, so even allowing for all the stops wasn't so horrendous. There were a lot of streetcars going out on Forbes and Fifth, and in those days, both of those streets were two ways. So as I recall, there was service either on Forbes or on Fifth. So that continued, it was toward the end of my junior year. That's right, 50. It was sometime then in late 50, into 51. No, maybe, yeah, the spring of 51. That's right. Yeah, the spring of 51 or so on, that my parents bought a home on Whiteman Street, 2136 Whiteman Street. And the store they still kept, and my mother and father would continue to go to the store, but now my commute was from Squirrel Hill. And so it was a little closer, but I still went down by streetcar. And I finished my third and fourth years.
Were you always interested in science? And
yes, well, I think I had mentioned to you before, correct me if I'm wrong, that my father had always told me that I was going to be a doctor, and so it never occurred to me that, I would do anything else. It was just really that simple. I mean, I never gave it a second thought. Nobody asked me. Now, maybe if I found it abhorrent, the idea or so, and I might have rebelled, I don't know. I did not find it abhorrent, although I must say I never really enjoyed the basic science courses like chemistry or physics and so on. I didn't mind the biological courses in zoology. I found those interesting. I did okay in chemistry and physics. It wasn't a matter of their being too difficult. I just frankly didn't. I liked more political science and history and philosophy and a little psychology and my German language class. I found those much more enjoyable. But I had to do the obligatory science courses, of course, like all pre-meds. But it never occurred to me that I would do otherwise. And I don't know whether I mentioned to you, it wasn't until around the end of my third year, going into my fourth year, when I was so very active on campus, that everybody assumed that I was pre-law, because all the so-called BMOCs, big men on campus, almost all of them were pre-laws. If you were involved in student politics and student activities, you were pre-law, with a few exceptions, maybe business administration or so on. There were very, very few pre-meds and other science-type people involved in those. I had reached a point in my junior year in which I was really, I was a full-time extracurricular person and a part-time student. I mean, I had a full load, but I wasn't attending very many classes. I just did not have time. I wasn't cutting classes, sitting around drinking coffee. I was then going into my, between the junior and senior years, in those 2 years, and I was president of my fraternity. I was president of the YMCA. I was chosen as the business manager of Pitt News, which I then gave up, even though it was a full scholarship, because I had to give up something, and I chose that which was the only thing that was financially beneficial. But I just had less interest in that than other things. I was then elected president of the student body, and I was the concertmaster and president of the orchestra, and I was the vice president of men's debate, and I was the business manager of the Pitt Players, and then I was the concertmaster of the orchestra for a couple of plays, and then, to everybody's surprise, because I had never auditioned for anything, I went in one day in my senior year to make my usual pitch for tickets and explain how that would all work, and as I always did as business manager. And Harvey Pope, who was the faculty member in charge, I think he asked me to read. So I read, and I got the lead in Our Town, which, as you know, is essentially the whole play. You know, the stage manager in Our Town, that's it. So I had that thrown into the pie in my senior year. And it was a great delight for me. So you can see there really wasn't much time to go to school.
Did you have time to date?
I dated. I didn't deprive myself of that. Although I never really went steady, or I was never pinned to anybody. But I dated a lot of different girls, nice girls, mostly from Squirrel Hill, Celebrity, one or two Jewish girls from out of town who were going to, was called PCW in those days, right? Pennsylvania College for Women, Chatham. And we always had social affairs. That was the other nice thing with the fraternity, you didn't have to plan.
Right.
And on other days, we didn't have social affairs. I had some good friends, and we would go downtown to catch a movie, sit in those wonderful loge seats at the Low East Penn or elsewhere. Remember those magnificent movie theaters downtown? And I remember I was never much for dressing up, and I always hated to wear ties, but I never thought of going downtown on a Saturday night without wearing a tie and a jacket. As I'm just thinking about that today, you can go into the fanciest restaurants almost without a jacket or a tie. It's interesting. I should have grown up today from that standpoint, or grown up in Israel 20 years ago when nobody ever heard of a tie. I hated ties, but I always had to wear them. They wrote an article about me one time, the Pitt News, about how my tie was always loose and so on. I very much enjoyed those years. They were really great, great years. Fraternity did well. We won the Interfraternity Cup a couple of times. We came in a close second, I think, two other times in the 4 years that I was there. And later, by the way, I was to become active in the fraternity as a national officer and then became the president, that national president of Phi Epsilon Pi for a couple of years subsequently, following in the footsteps of my good friend Victor Cavalier. And then I was
still in college when you got up?
No. You had to be, that came later on, yeah. I was selected as the undergraduate of the year by the fraternity, and we had about 50 chapters, so I felt that was quite an honor. But you'll see some of that stuff in the curriculum.
Were there any influential professors that you had at the university that helped to lead your career or further it?
I can't really say that there was. There were some professors, obviously, uh-huh. that I liked, but. You know, when you read these stories about somebody taking someone in hand, it's not that I was, above that sort of thing or so on, but as I've said, I knew that I was pre-med and that I was going to go to medical school, so, you know, it's not that I was seeking counsel. I started to say before, and I digressed, I'm sorry, that it wasn't until that late junior into the senior year with all of those activities, and especially being involved in things like debate and politics and student government, and so on, and there was a lot of politicking behind the scenes and the coalitions, etc., that people always just asked me what law school I was going to. And I think that's where the idea first was put into my mind about going to law school. Then I began to make inquiries later on, after I got into med school, about this field of legal medicine. And I wrote to the AMA and the ABA, and they gave me some suggestions and leads, and then I was put in touch with a man who at that time was the dean of the field, Dr. Lewis Regan, R-E-G-A-N, a wonderful man from the West Coast, from L.A., and he invited me to attend in 1955. I was in my third year of med school, the first ever national conference co-sponsored by the AMA and the ABA. I'll never forget it. It was in New York, and I went up there, and I met him, and he took time and sat down with me and gave me a good perspective of what was involved in legal medicine. And it literally was from that point that I decided that I would go to law school and get a law degree. So that was a major influence in my life. Although I was thinking of it, that man, whom I never had a chance to really get to know real well because he was in L.A., and then he died a few years later. He did some teaching and practicing and lecturing and consulting and so on, yeah. He was in L.A., as I say. Then, so I went to med school the first 2 years at Buffalo. Some Phi Eps had gone there before, and I got accepted there, and I went there. And then I transferred back to Pitt my third and fourth years and lived at home. Never occurred to me, by the way, is interesting too, to live away from home. Today, kids, can live in Squirrel Hill. A lot of them, I'm sure, or Gentile kids in Mount Lebanon or wherever, and never think for one moment of living at home. I'm talking about kids that have good relationships. I don't know about my kids who can't wait to break away, but kids that love their parents and so on. But they got to have their own place. It never occurred to me for one moment. I didn't want my own place. I mean, it wasn't a decision that I made. I don't know, maybe subconsciously I recognized my parents and other money, but I cannot say consciously that I said, well, I'm not going to do this because of my parents, because if I really wanted it, I could have earned. I was giving some violin lessons with my teacher. She had become quite ill with a bad heart, and I helped her. Melita Barzhansky. She was located above the Waldorf Bakery on Murray Avenue. M-E-L-I-T-T-A, Melita Barzansky, B-A-R-J-A-N-S-K-Y. She had studied with Leopold Auer, A-U-E-R, in St. Petersburg, with Yasha Heifetz and that crew. She was from that generation, and she was outstanding. Hers was one of the few Jewish families that was allowed to live in Leningrad. And she had then gone to Paris and then made her way eventually to America. Her husband had died. She was a magnificent woman. And I helped her then while I was in medical school.
Wow.
Coming out. I'd done it in college and then continued it again in medical school.
Were you still able to practice your violin?
No. See, for the 4 years of college, it was great because of the university orchestra. And then, by the way, there was an all-state orchestra, too, and I was the concertmaster of that for a couple of years. But then med school is when it started to, be ignored, regrettably, because, med school is difficult. It's the hours, and not only is it difficult, but it's consuming. In those days, much more so than today, in terms of the number of hours you had to spend as a student. We didn't have many electives. First 2 years, there were no electives. First 2 years were completely didactic. Third and fourth years, still a lot of didactic stuff, and then assigned what we called clinical serves to this hospital for obstetrics, to that hospital for medicine, and so on. Nowadays, kids can go 3 months to Africa, 3 months, my wife and I were once in Yugoslavia, standing there in the square and talking to a young man. He was doing a three-month elective from the University of Virginia on the Yugoslavian health plan. That sort of business. Well, we didn't have that. So the hours were very, very long, and sometimes you had to stay at the hospital. So anyway, then I interned at St. Francis General Hospital, where I had worked for 2 years in my third and fourth years as a medical student as a junior intern. Getting back to the business about, I could have lived there, I made some money, and I did make some money, but I still lived at home, and I was delighted to be home with my mother taking care of my laundry and my food and so on, and I was an only child, and we had a nice house, and I had a very big room, and so it never occurred to me, and if I had dates and I wanted to come there late at night downstairs in the living room, I would just come back with my date to the house. So anyway, then I worked at St. Francis for what they used to call junior internships. We would do histories and physicals on newly admitted patients. I did that for 2 years, and I liked the hospital. They liked me and my friends, and I interned there, 56 to 57. And then one day I was talking with my good friend and roommate, he told me that he was going to start a pathology residency at the Veterans Administration Hospital in Pittsburgh. And I got to thinking about it, and I looked into it, and the bottom line was that I got permission from the chief there, Dr. Edwin R. Fisher, who later became chairman of pathology at Shadyside Hospital for many years. Pittsburgh, or Bernard Fisher's brother, Edwin R. Fisher, and from the chairman of the Department of Pathology at Pitt Medical School, a very prominent guy named Dixon, Frank Dixon, D-I-X-O-N. They gave me permission to go to law school while I was doing my residency in pathology, as long as I did my work. So I was accepted, I had been accepted to both Harvard and Yale law schools, quite an accomplishment, and they both offered me scholarships, because I really creamed that law school aptitude, because I just had a good morning. I was in the 99th percentile.
Wow.
I remember I'd been up rather late. I was an intern then, and I was rushing off to a Pitt football game on a Saturday afternoon, and I took that test in a big hall at the cathedral. Anyway, so I, with the medical degree and the 99th percentile, I had to then turn those down because I had been accepted at Pitt, the only other law school I applied to, because I decided that it would be more important to get a specialty in medicine than, just go to law school, which was a wise decision, even though Harvard and Yale law schools are very special places. But I did my residency, and it was quite a mad dash, back and forth 5 days a week between the VA hospital up on the hill and the cathedral. Parking was my biggest problem, more than anything else. where to park. I got all kinds of tickets everywhere. And then I was also working, moonlighting, at three or four different hospitals during those couple of years, covering from 6 p.m. to 7 a.m. in the morning at the emergency room in the house on the weekends. And
what year was this?
57 to 59. So I had 2 years of residency at the VA while I was going 2 years as a full-time law student at Pitt and working on average at least 3 to 4 nights a week, and I'd say 2 out of every 3 weekends, Saturday and Sunday. But I never felt really deprived. I knew what I wanted to do. I was single. I was still living at home. And I had a car now when I came back in my third year of medical school, my first car ever, third year of medical school. So I managed. And then I had joined what was called the Berry Program, named after a Colonel Berry, B-E-R-R-Y, who had developed a program for the armed forces whereby people could seek a deferment who are in medical school so that they could specialize and then pay their obligatory time later. In those days, you had to go into the military for 2 years, every able-bodied person, except Bill Clinton and Jack Kemp. Most other able-bodied people went into the service. So it was called the Berry Program. It made sense for them. Instead of getting all GPs out of med school, they would get here.